Get ready for episode number 78.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hey everybody, welcome to a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. No matter what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a Class A or a Class C, a Class B, if a tent, a trailer, whatever it is, this show is for you, even if you're just thinking about getting an RV. Because we talk here about getting out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, as well as sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and tech to enhance our camping and RV experience. That is what Road Trekking the Podcast is all about, the RV lifestyle. Well, welcome to another episode of the RV Podcast. This episode brought to you by Van City RV in St. Louis, Missouri, and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, Nevada, bringing you the largest inventory of small motorhomes from three locations. By Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV. And Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. Well, lots to talk about now as we're well into the month of March. The RV travel season is about to start, and that is one of the things we're going to talk about today. Our special guest today coming up later on the program is none other than the famous, or maybe I should say infamous, Camp Skunk, our sort of our resident full-timer and curmudgeon on our roadtrekking.com blog. Camp Skunk getting ready to begin his annual migration in his motorhome across the U.S. from the east to the west. He's going to offer up some tips for all of us, no matter what kind of an RV we have, about some of the things that we should do to get our RV ready for the new travel season. So stay tuned. That's coming up a little bit later on. We've got a whole bunch of listener questions and comments that we'll talk to on a lot of different topics. We've got a great tip from Jennifer on one of our favorite appliances and some tech info on three apps that you may want to pick up, particularly if you travel with other people or you want to keep in touch with a group. Some really cool apps that will turn your smartphone into a walkie-talkie. All that, plus an off-the-beaten-path report. But first, let's bring on my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer, who's busy packing because we're taking off in just a day or so.
And do I break the news to him that I haven't packed a thing?
What?
What? With new puppy, I've been very busy. It's very hard to pack when you have somebody grabbing everything you bring out, and I feel guilty locking the little guy up.
Well, you know, they tell us that we're supposed to do that, but I kind of feel bad because we're not going to be taking Bo with us on this trip. This is just a 10-day trip we're doing, but because he still has one more series of puppy shots, our vet said that we probably shouldn't take him from traveling, so
we are going to miss him.
Yeah, we.
But
I think
on the other hand, we get to sleep in the morning. We're not going to be getting up at 5 a.m.
We aren't? But we're on the road. We got places to go, things to see.
Mm. I was really looking forward to sleeping in
a
little bit.
All right, I'll let you sleep in. I'll just go to the front of the van and do some work. But we're headed down to, we got a couple of places on it. We got a place I want to investigate if we can get away early enough in on the Tennessee-Kentucky border. It's a really cool wilderness area there that we've never been to. And I don't know if we'll get to that going down or coming back, but for sure we want to do that. Then we're heading down to our favorite stretch of Florida sunshine on the Emerald Coast in the Destin, Florida area. We'll be staying at Camp Gulf out there, which is right on the beautiful Emerald shoreline of the Gulf of Mexico and Fort Walton Beach, Florida, near Destin. And then we'll be over in Perry, Georgia, at the Family Motor Coach Association's annual reunion, which is next week. And we'll be there putting on a couple of seminars and getting a chance to greet and meet many of you. So we got a good 10-day, 12-day trip coming up.
I can't believe how hard it is to get out the door. I mean, all these things keep coming up.
Well, one of the things is we took everything out of the RV, which we do every year. So we've got to put a lot of stuff that we normally leave in it all year. We've got to put that back in it. And I got to go out there and I want to take the antifreeze out of the holding tank. So I've got to fill that up and drain that and fill it up and put a little bleach in and clean that up. That's one of the things we're going to talk about later on with Camp Skunk, who's getting ready to travel, about some of the things we should do with our RVs to get them ready for the travel season. But we got a lot to do, plus packing, right?
Yes. And, you know, being a female, all the women will relate. I'm going to go get my hair done today. And we had to go vote today.
Yes, yeah, primary day in Michigan.
It's kind of fun this year because this year people care about how the people of Michigan vote. Normally, nobody cares how Michigan votes.
Oh,
it's already decided before they get to us.
I mean, everybody is like so polarized. We just see they all walk with their arms crossed and they have attitudes. So.
Oh, I'm just so happy everybody's out there voting that people care.
Yeah, they do indeed care this year. But man, there's like no middle ground. I'll say that. Everybody's up in arms, no matter which side of the political spectrum they're on. I'm kind of glad that's what I like about this RV lifestyle. We don't have to talk about all that stuff and get people all upset. The only thing we get upset with
gets your pulse up.
Yeah, well, my pulse is
up. But not in
a
healthy way.
Let's go hiking instead. So.
Yeah, that's a better
idea.
All
right. Are you ready to get to work?
I am.
Here we go.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
My tip this week is about one device in our RV we probably use more than any other device or appliance, the clock. Specifically, a very handy wall clock. We use the SkyScan Atomic Digital Clock with indoor and outdoor temperature. We got it on Amazon for $38. There's an outdoor sensor that Mike mounted on our outdoor rear door with industrial strength Velcro. On the inside, he mounted the main display on the wall between the rear bed and the galley, also with Velcro. Both the sensor and the display stay firmly in place, even on bumpy roads. The display is very easy to read, especially with those 3-inch time digits. We get an inside temperature reading and an outside temperature, plus the time as well as the day and the date. We like this clock because it is always accurate. That's because it is self-setting and uses atomic time. Every day around 2 a.m., it syncs by radio waves to the official U.S. time standard in Fort Collins, Colorado. All you do is select the time zone you are in, and the clock automatically adjusts the time and, like it, will do on Sunday, March 13th, automatically sets itself to daylight savings time. The clock is quite attractive. The one we picked has black frame that matches very nicely with the gray and ebony interior colors of our Road Trek. You'll find a link to the one we have on the show notes page for this episode at roadtrekking.com/78.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Yes. I would like to ask if you have a pre-tick trip tick list for us. We're just starting out on RVing and I need a list of things to check before we leave each time. Thank you.
No, okay. I'm not quite sure if you're looking for things you want to do before you like turn the engine on. That's going to depend on what kind of an RV you have, because every vehicle is a little bit differently. You know, you might want to have to turn on the battery, you want to turn on the inverter, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, without knowing what kind of RV you have, I can't answer that kind of a checklist. I know a lot of people will put a little list that they'll make up and they'll say, you know, like before they leave the campsite, they'll put it on the driver's side, the driver's wheel before you even move, you know, step retracted, awning in, wife on board, that kind of stuff, you know, before you take off. So I don't know if that's the checklist you mean. I suspect, though, what you're talking about is my packing list, my suggested RV packing list. And I do have a list that we have made available to those who subscribe to our RV newsletter that I send out every Monday morning. So every subscriber who signed up for that had an opportunity when they hit the subscribe button to download that packing list. And then it's the kind of thing you put on your computer and then you can print it out, you know, and you check off all the stuff so you can remember what it is that you want to pack inside your group. So if that's what you mean, just send me an email. You know, mike@roadtrucking.com and tell me you'd like that packing list and I will send you a download link to it. Those of you who are on the list, you already have it. New signups for our mailing list are now being offered. I did a 380-page ebook that they get free when you subscribe to the, this is for new subscribers, not you 14,000 current subscribers. This is a new thing for new subscribers. They get a brand new 380-page ebook on my favorite bucket list trips, about 50 different trips with pictures and links and stuff. And that's for signing up for our newsletter. Our newsletter is absolutely free. It goes out every Monday. And in it, we list RV news and some tips and lots of fun stuff. So most of you, many of you are, I'm sure, are already listening. So if you want that packing list, just send me an email and I will get it to you. So hopefully that is what you want. And if not, making a checklist, you know, of all the things you want, you have to do before you start your gear, you start your and put your motorhome or your RV in gear. That's what you want to make a checklist of. So you always know, you know, that you've unplugged the utilities, you've put the stair in, like the step in and all that sort of stuff. So everybody makes up those based on what their unit is, what kind of an RV they have. So hope that kind of helped you out. Here's another question.
Mike and Jennifer, we're interested in the Canary. We have the Jetpack. We have 18 gigabytes of Verizon. How much usage will the Canary take of this 18 gigabytes? What's your recommendations for when to have it off and on?
Thank you. That's Ron who phoned that in. And Ron, you're talking about the Canary. For those of you who wonder, what is he talking about? The Canary, I did a post on our roadtrekking.com blog a couple of weeks ago, a video review of the Canary, which is a kind of a security system. They originally made it for homes, and it's a really cool little device. Cost about, I think, $299, I think, is the cost of it, but it's really powerful. It works on Wi-Fi. That's why he talked about having the Jetpack in his RV. That's the special data connector that Verizon offers. Other people have the Jetpack too. It works on AT&T and others, but in his case, it's Verizon. And so it will, just as it works really well in the home, it will work on the RV. But your question is about data use, and that is the $64 million question. Actually, wasn't that show called the $64,000 question back in the 60s or 70s? Remember that? I barely remember that, but now it's a $64 million because of inflation. But anyway, the Canary is this little device. It's a little circular, oblong-shaped device that sits on a counter with a wide-angle camera, high-def camera, and it also has a microphone. And it monitors with video whatever is going on within its field of vision. It will adjust to your pets. If your pets move around a little bit, it won't sound false alarms. And what it does is it transmits audio and video to an app that you can watch on your smartphone or your tablet wherever you are. So it works great in the home where it's a fixed location. But we figure, well, it'll work great in the RV. So we have hooked ours up, and I have yet to use it on a long trip. We will hook it up this time on our trip, and I'll try and give you an idea of exact data use. But what it does is it connects to the Wi-Fi network in your RV or in your home, if you had it in your home. And then it is always there, and you can just call up your app and see live video, and it also gives you, this is what I really like about the Canary, it also gives you a readout of the temperature inside your Canary. So as we travel with our new pet, Bo, our new dog, Bo, this summer, and we visit various places, and it's very hot, it gives me an idea not only to see how Bo is doing in there, but making sure that our air conditioning and it's not too hot inside the RV for him. So we really are delighted with that feature. But your question about data use is the one caveat I have about this, because data is very expensive, as you know. Streaming video, which the Canary does, is also very intensive. In a home Wi-Fi connection where you have unlimited data, it's not so much of an issue. But in a RV setting where you're accessing through a data card, you're limited by whatever your data budget is. And in your case, it's 18 gigabytes. Now, that's a lot. That's a lot for a typical month for somebody. But if you were to run this Canary 24/7 while you're out, it would gobble through that and more in just a few days. So the key to using that Canary is to use it sparingly. If you have pets, when you are out having dinner for an hour or two, or if you're in a national park and maybe they don't let pets go on long trips, and you want to, or on hikes, you know, on some of the trails, and you want to go on a short hiking trail for an hour or two, then I would run the Canary. If I'm parked in a high traffic area where, I'm a little worried about somebody breaking in while we're out having dinner or shopping, I'll turn the Canary on. And it sounds an alarm, and when activity comes, it will tell you, it'll alert you with a text message or whatever you want, however you set it up. And you can also look at the live stream. But the key is live stream takes a lot of data. How much? I'm not entirely sure. Now, we're not taking our dog on this 10-day trip we're using, but I am going to use the Canary several times when we stop for dinner, if we eat out, if we go for a hike. I'm going to turn it on and have it monitor what's going on in our RV. So I'll let you know ahead of time. But if it's not cost efficient to take this unit and to have it run 24/7. I'll tell you right now, Ron, that would take up that 18 gigabytes in just a few days, because streaming video is very data intensive. So use it sparingly, but it's the best solution I have found so far. Really like it a lot. All right, another question that came in this past week, and this had to do with an answer that we gave last week. I was recommending, somebody wanted to know about some photo editing and getting video resolution correct on his pictures, on his monitor. That's why I recommended the Apple MacBook Pro, and I recommended a piece of software called Lightroom. And we got some reader feedback, listener feedback on that, so here it is.
Hi, Mike. John Freitag. Kathy and I met you at the Montana event last year, where we had a wonderful time. Thank you very much for that. As we were motoring down through Texas yesterday, enjoying episode 77, I noted that you spoke with a photographer who was having issues with color balance with his monitor, and one of the things you recommended was that he switch over to Apple, which I completely endorse. I've used Apple for years and find it an absolutely wonderful platform. but 2 points I'd like to make. One is, he was using Photoshop, and I use both Photoshop and Lightroom. But Adobe, at least when I did it, will allow you to do a one-time platform change for a nominal fee. I think it was $5 when I did it. Secondly, is if he's having color balance issues, particularly if he prints like I do, he needs to get a monitor calibration device. I use a Spider 5. It's about $150. Does a wonderful job so that what you see on the screen coincides with what you see coming out of the printer. And particularly if he uses more than one monitor, like a desktop and a laptop, that's an important thing to have. So thank you very much for the podcast. We'll continue to enjoy them as we traipse down the road. We're right now in Texas and heading toward warmer weather. So my best to you and to Jennifer, and thanks much for your podcast, Mike. Bye.
Well, thanks for that report, John, and that's a great recommendation. Thanks for your suggestions. I love Lightroom, and like I said, Lightroom is a pretty cool program. Last week, I did mention that I used Lynda, L-Y-N-D-A, to go take some online classes on how to work with Lightroom and to process my photos. And I did get a couple of emails from people who were saying, that those classes cost money. They do. I think they're like $40 or so to take one. I found them well worth it. But on the other hand, I did find a number of people who suggested that we look at the Adobe site, because they have a lot of free training for both Lightroom and Photoshop, which is the premier photo editing software they have. but I can't speak highly enough about Lightroom. I just thoroughly enjoy it. It's been a great piece of software. All right, one more question from our voice line. And that's from the leave message link on the right side of the roadtrekking.com blog. Here's another question. Hello, listener.
Hi, Mike. This is Mike. I'm not sure if you saw my question about how the quality of Winnebago compares to Road Trek. I posted it on the post you had with the video walkthrough of the Road Trek factory. And the reason I asked is because we're considering a Winnebago Via, which is a little bit larger. I think it's a small Class A, but will accommodate a lot more grandkids. We're not planning on being full-timers right now, but we do plan on camping a few weeks a year. And we like the fact the Via has a diesel of decent mileage, but we don't like the lack of solar, etc. Any input would be appreciated, and thanks for your fascinating trek reporting.
All right. Well, thank you for your question. Now, I should tell you right off the start here, I do not have a Winnebago Via. I have been in the Winnebago Via, actually. I met somebody at a campground last year, and they had one, and I spent some time in it, and thoroughly enjoyed it. It was I enjoyed it very much. It was a nice unit, but it is not a Class A, as you suggested. Although it kind of looks like one, it's style like one. It's actually a Class C or a Type C. The industry doesn't like us referring to RVs as Class A, Class B, Class C, which is what everybody calls them. They think that sounds too elitist, so we call them Type A, Type B, and Type C. But hey, come on, we all talk Class C. So it's really a Class C. It's on the Sprinter chassis, which is the same chassis used by most of the Class B manufacturers for some of their premier models. Now, what makes the Winnebago Via a little different is it's long on the longish side. It's about a 25-foot chassis. I have the Road Trek CS Adventurous XL, which means extra length on the Sprinter package. And that is just under 25. I think it's 24 feet, 6 inches, something like that. Well, this is 25, the Winnebago Via. And it's wider. It has a couple of slide outs, of small side outs on the driver's side door. It's kind of like, I hate to insult anybody, but it's kind of like shoebox shaped, you know? And it looks like a Class B. It's nice. I like the paint job, the paint colors, things that they make. But it is essentially a Class C on a Class B chassis, which is the Sprinter, with it's kind of a box that they built bolt onto there with a couple of slide outs on it. Fully equipped, it's about $140,000. Now, it has because of those slide outs, it has a wider interior when you're stopped, obviously, and it will sleep more people more comfortably. It has a dedicated bathroom. It has a nice large refrigerator, although you can get that same refrigerator on Class B's as well. So in terms of driving ease, it's not as easy to drive as a Type B, as a Road Trek or some of the other ones. Besides Road Trek, there's, you know, leisure travel vans and Pleasure Way that are Class B's, and there's Interstate from Airstream, which are pure Class B's. Those are the reason people like those is they're so easy to get around. You can use them as a second vehicle if you like. That's how easy they are. This the Winnebago Via is a little bigger. It weighs more. It weighs about 9,000 pounds. It has a 4,500 pound towing capacity. It's in diesel. You can get it at you get about maybe 13 gallons an hour. 13 miles a gallon, about that. But here's the thing to look at: what is it warrantied for? When you buy any kind and shop for an RV, first find out what are you going to use. Now, you seem to have a pretty good clear idea what you want to use yours for. You want some room for the grandkids. That's great. What's the warranty on it? In the case of the basic warranty for the Winnebago View, it's 12 months. It's 15,000 miles. That is not a long warranty. check out Road Trex, check out other warranties, and you'll see that many of the Class Bs have much better warranties in terms of it. So with all those caveats, because I have not driven one, I've not slept in one, I have been in one and enjoyed it, I would probably not get one because it's not that different. It's a box that they strap onto a Sprinter chassis rather than the chassis that is custom fitted as it is for a Class B. But hey, to all of us are different strokes, and what it counts is that you're happy and that you're able to get out there and enjoy it. So I hope that answered your question. We love to get your questions, and we would love to have some for next week's podcast. Here's how you become a part of the show.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment. Look on the right side of mikesroadtrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, Nevada, bringing you the largest inventory that you'll find of Class B motorhomes from three locations. All three, they have this great fly and drive program. They'll pick you up at the airport. After you cut your deal online or on the phone, find the best price for the RV that's right for you, then you fly in. They reimburse you up to $500 towards your airfare. They'll take you to the dealership where your RV will be waiting for you, fully prepped for travel and ready to go. Here is Dan the Van Man with what's happening this week. Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we got some great specials this week on our B Pluses. You can check those out at VanCityRV.com, starting out at $68,900, brand new. We're also looking for some great trade-ins. So if you have a Road Trek, Pleasureway, Leisure Travel, you're looking to trade up, give us a call at 1-800-467-3905 or check us out at VanCityRV.com.
News.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Hey, we got a story that it's probably one of everybody's worst nightmare, but you know, it's out there, and I'm gonna go with it. It's I think it's important to have a little closure on it. This has to do with a couple, a Canadian couple in their mid 70s who disappeared a couple years ago. While they were on one of their annual motorhome trips. He was 78, she was 77, and they were last seen fueling up their motorhome in their hometown of St. Albert in Alberta, and they were about ready to take off. St. Albert's a bedroom community of Edmonton, and they were heading out for one of their annual holidays. They were going to go into British Columbia. And Royal Canadian Mounted Police believe that these guys were abducted and murdered along the way. Although their bodies have never been found, a few days later, their burned out motorhome was found, as well as the SUV towing. And they made an arrest. It's gone on. It's dragged on and off with some legal issues for some time. But the chief suspect, they found his fingerprint and DNA on a beer can inside the burned out motorhome. They also found that he had used the couple's cell phone the day they had disappeared. And there's some other evidence. Anyway, that guy is going to trial now in Alberta. And it looks like closure for the family. It's been a long, emotional, interrupted march to the courtroom for this bad guy, the suspected bad guy, and the family is looking for closure. And I think it's important to note that, yes, sometimes these things happen. They're very rare. But when they do, the bad guys get caught. And in this case, they are pretty confident they got him, and his trial is now underway up in Canada. Hey, here's an interesting story. We've been talking a lot on this podcast and in the blog about solar, how RVers are rushing en masse to get solar for their RVs. Well, I want to applaud a RV park in California that has invested $1.1 million in solar power. This is the Castaic Lake RV Park. And they are installing right now solar panels in their park. They've been in business out there in the Santa Clarita Valley for 38 years. Originally, it was a a KOA, I think, their campground. But then a bunch of local guys bought it and it fixed it up. It's a big campground. They've got 309 sites. But they were getting killed with utility bills. During peak season, they said their utility energy bills were running $20,000 a month. And so they have been looking around for a long time, and they finally came up with a deal to put in solar, to pull in solar. And so $1.1 million invested, they say that they will have payback within 5 years. The way they calculate it, they say in the winter, they get Edison bills about $8,000 a month, goes up to $20,000 during the sizzling hot summer temperatures out there. But with this new solar system, the park expects to save $6,000 to $7,000 per month in energy costs. And the power goes right back into an Edison feed. It supplements the power that Edison supplies them, so they can supply less, Edison supplies less power to the park, and they generate through solar a huge chunk. So congratulations to these folks. This is pretty cool. Out in Santa Clarita Valley in California, Castaic Lake RV Park. I'll give them a visit, and I think you're going to see more and more people doing the same thing. More and more campgrounds as solar technology improves, just as it does in RVs. It's becoming a good way to provide some power in campgrounds. This portion of the podcast brought to you by Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name to know in choosing a heating system for your RV. It's a hydronic system. The Aldi hydronic system works with water, and it brings you so many awesome features and benefits that you just cannot get with any other kind of motor home heating system. The Aldi system is a silent, radiant heat. You know, if you've been house hunting and you go into these high-end homes, that's the kind of heat they have, that silent, radiant, hot water heat. And why? Because it is such a great heat. It's this warm, even, natural heated interior. You know, most motorhomes use this forced air system that's so dry and it's noisy. The Aldi system is silent, it's radiant, it increases interior space, it only draws less than an amp on 12 volts DC. So right away, that's going to extend the life of your propane about 40% over forced air, because forced air is like, you know, that's a huge energy drain. So you can heat this thing really well with lots of different options. The one Jennifer and I have on our Road Trek CS Adventurous XL is heated floor. Oh my gosh, is that nice? You have no idea how nice that is early in the morning as you get up. So check it all out. Aldi, A-L-D-E. It is the only name you need to know when you are shopping for a motorhome. That's the heating system that you want.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
I love this week's tech tip. Everybody's got a smartphone, right? And sometimes you're traveling with other people. In fact, I've had a lot of time we're traveling with other people, or we've got a group of people we're going to meet up at a campground, or even our family that wants to know where it is. So what I have to say is for you is three apps that are kind of like, they kind of turn your smartphone into like a walkie-talkie. They allow you to record and send short little audio messages back and forth like a walkie-talkie. And there's three of them that I want to suggest to you this week. And these guys work with, no matter what platform you're on, I've got one for you. So the first one is called Zello, Z-E-L-L-O. And it promises boldly to turn your phone or tablet into a walkie-talkie, has lightning fast speed and kind of this push-to-talk feature with just pushing a button. You record a message and then you send that over a Wi-Fi or your phone's data network, just like you would with a walkie-talkie. You can set it up to talk with others privately, or you can create a public group. Say a bunch of you are going to, like you're going to that FMCA rally in Perry, Georgia, and everybody just sort of sets it up and people can go back and forth and chat and you hear real voices. I like Zello because it's free and it works with iOS, the Apple system, with Android, and with Windows Phone. There's another one that's out there pretty cool, and I like, it's aptly called Roger, you know, like over and out, Roger. Well, Roger is another app that has walkie-talkie features. You push a big, simple button, you record your message, and you hit send. And one especially cool feature about the Roger app is that you can see the location, the weather, the time of day the person who's receiving your message is under, and all you need to get started is the phone number of the person you want to start communicating with by Roger. And then they don't even need to have the app. The app is free. It works with Apple and Android. So that's cool. It's Roger. And the other one is called Voxer, V-O-X-E-R. This also has the ability to send and deliver short little recorded messages. You can decide to listen to a message you receive when they're delivered, or you can wait until you're in a more private setting. You can also see the location of others. You can send photos with it as well. You can send videos, and you can send your location to others through Voxer. It's also free for iOS. Best way to do it is just go to the show notes page for this episode, roadtrekking.com/78. And you'll see under the tech tips, I've got links to all three of those apps. So give it a try. Turn your tablet or your smartphone into a walkie-talkie. This part of the podcast brought to you by Verizon, which operates America's most reliable wireless network with more than 112 million retail connections nationwide. You know, when it comes to network quality in the U.S., J.D. Power ranks Verizon highest across all six regions in the U.S., according to all the different U.S. wireless providers. The J.D. Power study surveyed more than 41,000 wireless subscribers across the U.S. about the performance of calls, of messaging, of data quality on their mobile devices. And it's the third time Verizon took the top spot in all six regions. And it comes on the heels of a recent RootMetrics National RootScore report that ranked Verizon's network highest in overall network performance for the fifth consecutive testing period. So consistently ranked number one for network performance. That's why I use Verizon. That is my only network that I use in my RV as we travel. I have found it personally to be the single most reliable network out there. I can get through in Verizon just about anywhere. And in the very rare occasions, that I've not had a signal, I'm able to get one within just a few minutes by getting into a different location. But it does an amazing job. Ranked number one by these third-party respected testing companies, Verizon continues to listen to what's important to customers. They're committed to providing the best network experience. And in addition to enhancing that XLTE coverage, that 4G coverage, and providing rural coverage as well, Verizon focused on increasing network capacity in some of those high traffic locations across the U.S. And while the company is dedicated to enhancing its 4G LTE network, they're currently testing now 5G technology. Wait till you see how fast that is. Anyway, if you're not on Verizon, isn't it time you join the nation's most reliable network? Join me. Check it out. You can visit your local Verizon retailer today to learn how you can switch and save. And don't forget to visit roadtrekking.com/VZW for stories about how technology can enhance your RV experience.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion
you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
This is always one of our most favorite segments in the podcast, Off the Beaten Path. And you know what we're talking about. We're talking about the places that you find when you kind of range off the interstate, the places that you find by serendipity. You just sort of run across them, or maybe you heard at a diner someone told you something, or you saw a provocative roadside sign that said, "Come investigate me." Well, those are the kind of reports we love to get. And if we accept and use one of yours on the air, we'll send you a free road trekking hat, which all the cool kids are wearing. So share those off the beaten path places that you have found, like many of our listeners do every week. Like this week, Tom Burkett does, as he takes us to southeastern Colorado. With no further ado, here's Tom Burkett and an off the beaten path report. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Jennifer and Mike. Summertime is a great time to wander around the western mountains. Out in southeastern Colorado, along the edge of the San Isabel National Forest, you might come across Bishop's Castle. It's not on any main road, but it is tall enough you might see it from one and just wonder what it is you're seeing. Jim Bishop bought 2.5 acres set into the National Forest in 1959 when he was 15 years old. He and his dad began building a family cabin on the land, and as it grew, so did Jim's ambitions. His dad soon tired of the endless construction, so Jim was left on his own to continue work on what has become an extraordinary structure at the edge of the mountains. Take Colorado Highway 165 west from Interstate 25 at exit 74 if you're on the big road. If, like us, you're more inclined to be on the blue highways, there are lots of scenic ways to get there. Our GPS once took us right over the mountains from the west on a road that few vehicles would dare to travel. Once you're within a mile or two, you can't miss it. Jim's been working on his freeform castle most days for more than 50 years, and it continues to grow. It has lots of levels, each one a surprise as you wander through. One floor is full of stained glass windows commemorating individuals and events, including weddings held at the castle. For the cost of making it, you could have one installed. Jim's family is in the ornamental ironwork business, and the castle is full of unique handmade decorations. Some, like the life-size dragon, are truly spectacular. On summer weekends, you can watch it spit flame. It's free to visit, but donations are welcome. And the gift shop has lots of tchotchkes to help you make a contribution to the work. While you're in the area, wander south to Monte Vista, where you can watch a drive-in movie from your motel room at the Movie Manor Motor Inn. Visit a ghost town like Ludlow or Bent's Old Fort, and don't miss the drive on the Frontier Pathways Scenic and Historic Byway. My grandmother grew up in a sod house on the prairie 50 miles east of here, and much of the land still looks like it did back then. Short grass, tiny towns, eccentric people, and little surprises just over the next rise. Don't miss wandering in southern Colorado. From Lyman to Durango, whether it's dusty plains or thin mountain air, it's worth the trip.
Thank you so much, Tom Burkett, who's one of our regular Off the Beaten Path contributors. And you're so right. There are surprises just waiting around the bend. If you've got one, if you've got an Off the Beaten Path report, just send it in to us. You can reach me through the blog at roadtrekking.com. We would love to hear from you. Well, this is the time of year that we are all getting ready to take off. In fact, as I'm making this podcast, I'm literally out there cleaning out the antifreeze out of my freshwater tanks and getting ready to sanitize them because Jennifer and I, as we said earlier, are about ready to take off. Also ready to take off from his annual hiatus that he takes from traveling in to be with family so he can hang out with family in Florida is our pal Camp Scott. Our resident curmudgeon and full-timer, Camp Skunk and his wife Sharon, along with their cat Fiona the Fearless, are on the road pretty much full-time. From about this time of year now all the way through Thanksgiving, they'll be traveling mostly in the West this year, as Camp Skunk will share in a moment. They're about ready to take off, and he'll talk about that, as well as some of the things that we all should do before we leave on that first trip. So with no further ado, let's bring on our pal and yours, Camp Skunk. Well, Camp Skunk joins us right now. Well, Camp Skunk, here we go. We're ready to start another 2016 travel season, a brand new season getting underway. You're all set to head out?
Yeah, we've been sitting here for a few months. I visit my family over the winter, and I'm hanging out at my sister's house, visiting my father and my brother and my sisters all down here in Florida. And it's getting a little crowded here for me. You know, there's people walking by all the time, and I'm anxious to get back out on the road and get some elbow room.
Well, a lot of people planning the same thing as they look at their travel schedules, and as we've been talking about here on the program today, it's time to get some good advice, and I can't think of anybody better than you to get our folks focused and ready to get their RVs ready to hit the road. So, what do we got for them this week? What would you? How many steps we got? And let's kind of give them an idea of what they should be doing as they get ready to start traveling again.
Well, I'm kind of a peculiar case, being a full timer and not going into freezing areas. But you know, for most people, you've had your RV in storage over the winter, And so, you know, you're going to have to dewinterize it, you know, get your manual out and find out how to flush all the antifreeze out and you know, sanitize your tanks and do all that stuff. Actually, I just sanitized my tanks. I've got to remember to do it, you know, because, you know, I'm using them all the time, but I still, you know, I'll drain them and put bleach in them and flush it all out and so forth.
So what's an
idea? Even though I'm using it all the time, you still have to make sure to sanitize the tanks. So that's what people who've had their in storage will have to do.
How much bleach do you put in? What's involved in sanitizing the tanks?
I put in a few ounces. Now, you know, I argued back and forth with Jan Seiner when we were putting the manuals together. He's one of these carpet bombing type bleach people. He'll put in a half a cup or so. It's a trade-off. You can put it in there very strong and then rinse it right back out, or you can put it in weaker and let it sit for, you know, a day or two or three. And I sort of do that in I do the latter here, so I'll put in a few ounces and fill the tank all the way up and let it sit at least overnight, sometimes for a couple of days, and then rinse it out. But it just follow the instructions in your manual, and you'll make sure to kill everything in there that's not supposed to be growing in there.
All right, so that's one that everybody ought to do at least once a year, is to do their sanitation. And again, those in cold climates, you want to actually take your antifreeze out of the system as well. Now, I'm leaving this week, and it still gets down below freezing every night up here in Michigan, and I'll probably dewinterize someplace down around Kentucky, Tennessee, and then I'll be good. But let's talk about the other steps involved in getting ready for travel. So take it away. Camp Skunk's rules for getting ready for a new travel season.
The one thing that I like to do is to wash and wax the exterior. I do that on the fly, you know, as I'm traveling around. But now that I'm in one place and have a ladder and all that stuff, I like to get up. I just wrote up for your blog last week about cleaning the solar panels on the roof. And I make sure that I thoroughly clean and wax all the paint surfaces, because that's just better for long-term preservation of the paint, to keep wax on it. And so that took me 3 days this time. I'm getting slower, and the Sprinter is bigger than my old Chevy. But I pay a lot of attention to detail and clean it well and wax it all up. I also detail out the dashboard and the door jams and lubricate all the rubber door seals and do all the automotive type maintenance that you need to keep doing to keep those seals supple and sealing well and so forth. Don't let them dry out and get cracked. I use silicone on those, and you know, the rest of it's just cleaning and waxing the paint surfaces.
So clean the RV well, and that's great. Okay, what else should we do to get ready?
After I do the paint and the exterior and clean all the glass and the dashboard and the doors and so forth, I start with cleaning the interior, the RV part of the interior. And because I am blessed with all this covered storage where I am, you know, I've got a garage and all these luxuries here, if I can get stuff out of the rain, I take everything out of the interior, you know, and the overheads and the cabinets and under the sink and so forth, and clean everything out, replace the shelf liner or clean the shelf liner, and make sure that all the cabinets are clean. I actually will break down and get out my leaf blower and blow out some of the areas, like under my bed is a big storage area for me with the permanent bed. So I blow all the cat hair and dust and dirt and road grime and all that stuff out and get it all cleaned up as best I can with all the things that I drive around with all the time out So that's you know, first I do the front, and then I do the kitchen, and then I do the back. I do that in sections, and pull all the stuff out of the cabinets and get everything all organized.
All right, so clean it out inside, wax and wash it on the outside, detail the inside, the dashboard, all of that stuff. And then where do we go? Then we're getting ready. We're getting closer to takeoff time, but what else do we do?
Well, I go through all of my stuff. When I have it all out, I sort through it, and I look at it, and I say, when is the last time I used this? See, we accumulate stuff as we go around, making our decisions as a couple here. Sometimes we tend to, how about say this diplomatically, we pick up stuff that is not very useful on a day-to-day basis. And so we consult and figure out which of this stuff we really need to take. Is it worth carrying this all around the continent one more time, or can we just store it in my sister's attic? So I am winnowing out stuff. Every time we stop here, we store more and more stuff. It turns out you really don't need that much stuff to live on the road, and some things that might have been a good idea when you bought them turned out not to work out very well. So all those white elephants get winnowed out and stored. And once I've made a decision about what I'm going to put back in and carry with me, I go ahead and repack all that stuff in a more efficient manner. Again, looking at how often do you use it. I don't want to store stuff that I use a lot way in the back and hard to get to. So everything is stored from, least used to all the way up to most used as I put it all in the cabinet. So the stuff I use a lot is on the front and easy to get to.
And then number five on Camp Skunk's things to do before you leave list. We've got everything cleaned out, packed, thrown away, the old stuff. And what's the final step of our five steps to getting ready to take off?
Well, the last thing I do is I catch up on all the maintenance and any modifications that I may have made. Having a somewhat unusual unit here with a bunch of prototype stuff on it. There are things that, I'm pulling wire and reconfiguring things and so forth. I touch up the cabinets where I put a ding in the cabinets. I'll get out some wood putty and some cherry colored pigment and touch up a few places. It's sort of a morale thing. Sharon's always worried about us wearing the thing out. So once a year, it's as beautiful as it can be, and everything is put back as close to brand new as possible. One of the things I just did, I have, that pin in the door of the bathroom down at the bottom?
Yes, I do. Yeah?
Yeah, okay. Mine rattles. In other words, you open the door, the catch is up at the top of the door. This is on an adventurous, long sprinter.
Yeah.
And the catch is at the top. So when you open the bathroom door, the first one, the catch is way at one end, so the thing wiggles like a diving board that you just jumped off of, and this pin rattled. And I've been listening to this thing rattle for a year and a half now, and I got tired of it. So what I did was I drilled the hole the pin goes through out a little bit and put a piece of clear plastic tubing in there as a cushion.
Oh.
So now not only will the pin not rattle, but it'll stay up. When you pull it all the way up, without pushing it over the catch, it'll stay up so the pin doesn't fall down so you can't shut the door.
So it's kind of like an insulator.
Little minor aggravations like that are things that I work on. So right now I'm very, very happy I don't have to listen to that pin rattle anymore.
It's amazing, isn't it, how the little things like that can drive us nuts as we travel. Well, one last question for you. You have, and you've shared this before, but you have an interesting way of traveling. You go from east to west, south to north, but you're always looking for a particular climate. What's the general route that Camp Skunk follows each year as he begins his new travel season?
Well, it's warming up now here. I have been watching the weather out west, and I'm thinking about, I like to stay right around 70 degrees, but cool enough at night where you can sleep comfortably. And it's starting, here in the second week of March, we're getting into some fairly decent travel weather. If I started out earlier, I would have been stuck down on I-10, but I may be able to go out I-40. It looks like it's down in the high 30s, low 40s up in Amarillo and across that part of the country. And so I may take a more northerly route. I've seen a lot of I-10, and we like to mix it up a little bit. But I should be able to head out. We got to watch out for the spring weather, with the tornadoes and stuff out there on the plains. You have to be careful and and keep an eye on the news and the weather while you're traveling. Make sure you don't get stuck in any bad weather. But we will probably work our way west, and we've been in the mountains a lot lately, so we'll probably spend more time on the coast this year. That's subject to revision. I have to talk to the committee in the back and see where we're going at any one given time. So we'll work our way out as far north as we have to stay nice and comfortably cool, and just follow the nice weather wherever we go.
Now, you also, and you've passed this tip on before, but a lot of our listeners are brand new. You have a great tip about New Mexico and about all the great spots to camp there each year. And I know you always spend a couple of weeks there before you move on. Tell them about New Mexico.
Oh, okay. As a matter of fact, the camping pass that I bought last year is still good for the rest of the month. So I'm going to go out there and use it. It's an annual camping pass. It costs $225 for out-of-state people like me, and it's free camping. You get to camp all you want for $225. So that works out, and per night it gets pretty cheap after you've been there a few weeks. And it's the nice thing about New Mexico is it's really 9 months a year camping. You can start out in March down in the desert along I-10. There's parks around Deming, New Mexico, Rock Hound and City of Rocks, and also Leesburg Dam over by Las Cruces. You can get out there now. It doesn't freeze at night. It's consistently above freezing. And then as it warms up, you go north and uphill up into the mountains, and you can even go up to 7,000 feet in spend August, fishing for trout up in the mountains. And we were there right before Thanksgiving. That's where we were right before we came all the way back to Florida. So it's from March through November. It's a very good camping there.
Well, great advice again from Camp Skunk, who is about to hit the road now for his travels, which will keep him on the road at least until Thanksgiving time or so this year. We look forward to hooking up with you a couple of times out there, and I know you'll be writing for the blog, the adventures, and the many useful tips. So we're looking forward to a happy and a successful 2016 travel season. Thanks, Camp Skunk, for all of that great advice.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I hope you're going to have fun out on the road, too.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road trekking.
And Jennifer and I will be road trekking in just a day or so. We'll look for you. We'll be down in Florida along the Emerald Coast, and also into South Georgia at near Perry, Georgia, for the Big Family Motor Coach Association family reunion. So if you're in those areas, come by and say hi. We'd love to shake a hand. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you would like to have your voice heard and be a part of the podcast, please record a voicemail message. Just go over to roadtrekking.com and click the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website where it says leave voice message. Also, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or through the Google Play Store. New episodes are released every Wednesday. You can also join our mailing list from the roadtrekking.com blog. We send out a special newsletter to subscribers every Monday. You can sign up and you get a free 380-page ebook that I have put together on my favorite boondocking spot. So that's for new subscribers to our mailing list. You can sign up for that right on the blog, as we said. Also, don't forget to please leave us a review. We love those 5-star reviews you've been leaving about the blog on iTunes. Those help us get noticed and more people discover the world of RV travel and the road trekking lifestyle. So again, remember, it doesn't matter what size your RV is. If you're out there traveling North America, enjoying God's country and enjoying camping, all that stuff, you are, by definition, a road trekker. And we're delighted to have you listen to the podcast. Thanks so much. On behalf of Jennifer, we'll see you next Wednesday and every day on the blog and through social media. Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks for putting us in your ear.